Fridays at the Damage Report. Very excited for this particular Friday, really all of them. But this one is special because we've decided to give you a bit of an upgrade. No more of that closing out the week with Brett Ehrlich or anything like that. We've got someone truly special. I hope he's not watching this. He probably isn't, but it'd be great if he was. Anyway, Yasmin joins us. Yasmin Ali Khan, welcome back to the Damage Report. How's it going?
Hi, thank you for that intro and apologies. For not being Brett Ehrlich on a Friday. I know we all miss him, but I'm very
happy. I know. And he's got very important work to do, which is why I'm dragging him when he can't defend himself. But anyway, you've been on the show numerous times, never on a Friday, which means this is your first opportunity to throw away some political garbage. So we're all very excited to see who you chose for that great honor.
Yeah. What do you want? Do I tell you now or do I?
No. Okay. No. Well, people gotta wait until you. We're not gonna give it away, right?
I'll keep it a secret. Door. I won't say anything. No spoilers.
Exactly. Yeah. But we do have our garbage can, and so we are ready to go. That is how we're gonna close out the week. So everyone's gonna want to stay tuned for that. But just in case you might be watching this and you're not familiar with Yasmin from previous appearances on the show, tell us a little bit about your work.
I have a podcast called The Global Thread, and on the podcast, what I do is I talk about different conflicts around the world that don't get as much coverage in the news as I feel like they should. Things that you probably heard a little bit about, but don't know the details and the implications and the significance of them. So I dive into those. Actually, you guys talked a little bit about Colombia on your show yesterday, and the upcoming episode is going to be about Taiwan and China and how the US is looped in with all of that. But then after that is going to be Colombia. So you're awesome. Infringing a little bit on my niche, but it's cool. It's fine.
We'll take down the video. Don't worry. Yeah. We're going to delete it. Scrub the internet from it. Yeah. In fact, let's take down all of meanwhile in going back the last few years. Anyway, thank you for being here. We will try to respect your boundaries better in the future. We here channel wise though, for all of you watching, we don't have any boundaries. You can hit that like button anytime, anywhere, as many times as you want. And feel free to share the stream. We're not really private in that way. Spread it wherever you want. And as we go through this hour of news, if you would like to send us any comments, tweets, super chats, twitchies, whatever, bing bongs from MySpace, you can do that. And we will respond to that as we go. With that said, we've got a lot of news to get to, Yasmin, so why don't we jump into it?
Let's do it.
We know that things have been devastating here in the US during the pandemic, but what if they're worse than we think? So let's start with the actual numbers as we believe them to be. According to Johns Hopkins, they have a current count of the numbers in the US brand of the pandemic, 32 million reported cases. That's like 1 in 10 Americans basically having gotten COVID. So great job, America. But much more importantly, 580,000 deaths. So that's cases and deaths, not really delving into people who've had horrendous stays in the hospital, but didn't die, thankfully were released, but might have lifelong health problems. So all of that, that's the number, 580,000. But there is a new analysis by researchers at the University of Washington where they say they think the number might be much higher, 905,000 deaths. And so we're gonna get into how they might have come to that. But Yasmin, I'm curious, I mean, what do you think about the prospect that we could be almost undercounting by half?
You know, I guess it's not surprising, especially when you consider how awkward it was, the whole rollout with the vaccines, but not only the vaccine, but the beginning of the pandemic. Whenever, you know, the United States, we had the benefit of watching this pandemic start in China and move its way all the way over to the West, all the way through Europe. You know, it hit everywhere but here, and we were the last ones to get it, it seemed like. And we learned nothing from it. We weren't prepared for it. We lost a lot of time at the beginning. We lost a lot of just knowledge and know-how. We weren't prepared for it. Our systems weren't prepared for it. And it was all this emphasis on flattening the curve. And at least in Texas, I mean, I live in Texas right now. I remember we opened back up after 2 months of a really not thorough lockdown at all. Mm-hmm. So I'm not surprised. It was very disorganized. So obviously, there's going to be a lack of accountability and a lack of reporting somewhere that fell behind. Yeah. By half, though, is how do you account for that? How do you explain that? Who's in charge? Yeah.
I mean, well, I mean, we may never actually know. We may never actually land on, oh, we think these are the right numbers, but I'm glad that researchers are looking into it. That I'm sure will continue to happen. But for a lot of reasons that we'll get into, it is difficult to know for sure. But you are right that we had several months where coronavirus was devastating first regions of China, then spreading to other countries in the region. And we sort of just wasted that head start that we got. We were responsible for, I think, about 9 days, and then we gave up. And so we had a second spike, and that was terrible. And then things went down for a couple months, and then we thought, well, you know, it's nice to have lower numbers, but I really want stuffing. So we launched into a horrendous Thanksgiving and Christmas spike, the worst of all. So yeah, we did a terrible job. And it turns out that it might be even worse than we thought. So let's talk about how they got to these numbers. And also, let's extrapolate out from the US. So, you know, we're US centric, obviously, but across the world, they think that the global death toll might be as high as 7 million, more than double the official recorded tally. For many of the same reasons that they believe our numbers might be wrong, but perhaps even more so internationally. So the researchers found that the number of coronavirus attributed deaths in a given country is largely dependent on the levels of testing. In most parts of the world, deaths that occur outside a hospital setting don't get attributed to COVID because they likely were never tested for the virus. So that is going to be very much true in some countries that never, perhaps even now, have been able to reach the level of testing capacity that the US had at one point. Even ours has degraded since an earlier part of the pandemic. But imagine in the US. So we sort of believe, I guess, the first deaths were in mid-March. But we don't know that for sure. It is entirely possible that there were travelers bringing it in and spreading it in other parts of the country. But how would we say those were COVID deaths when we literally didn't even have a test that could tell you it was COVID? So any deaths like that would not have been counted. Any people across the country during the multiple spikes who didn't get tested, who might have been alone, who might have, you know, gotten sick at some point and then died alone at home. We know that that was big in New York. They would have never actually been confirmed to have COVID, and so they could not have been classified as a COVID death. So this is something, Yasmin, that we've talked about throughout the pandemic, the possibility that these numbers are being undercounted. But I mean, the idea that that many more millions of people around the world, that is a devastating prospect.
Yeah, it's also interesting when you consider that a lot of the rhetoric coming from really the right, the people who don't really believe in the pandemic or that it's not as bad or wasn't as bad as everyone else was saying that it was, there was also the concern about reporting and testing and things like that. So people were dying of COVID and they're saying, oh no, actually you died of strep throat or something like that, or you had a high fever. So there was all kinds of reporting issues that were already happening, and now we're seeing it on the other end. It makes sense that it would happen both ways. And then also, I remember since November, December, people getting very, very sick in the United States, and they didn't really know. They just thought it was a really bad flu, but it was here. It was for sure, it was here way before February, March. And I remember in February, I flew to Florida and I came back, and that was the last trip. And I was like, why did I do that? Because even then, that was probably a bad idea. But at that point, it really wasn't being reported as much or as if it was already here, and it definitely was. And I should not have gotten on that plane and gone to Florida of all places. No offense, Florida. I live in Texas, so like we're the same.
Yeah, no, not quite as bad as Florida, but it's close. Yeah, look, I've mentioned several times, I got horrendously ill at the early part of last year. It almost certainly wasn't COVID, but it was impossible to actually know. There's no way that we could have known. The test didn't exist. I was just really, really sick for weeks in a way that I'd never been before. So it was probably something else. I don't tend to get sick. I haven't been sick in over a year, but anyway. And so, yeah, like I'm glad that there are researchers that are doing these numbers. It's sort of, it's a sad commentary on the state of American acceptance of expertise that like 1/1000 of the people will seriously engage with this research, as will just have seen a segment on Sean Hannity and come away with the idea that, no, I think they're just like saying people died of COVID to make more money. It was probably something else. That is probably accepted at least 100 times more than the idea that we've been massively undercounting.
And Tucker Carlson now is anti the COVID vaccine. He definitely has it too, right? Like there's no way that he's not vaccinated.
Vaccine? No.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely vaccinated. And he's telling his viewers now who are already skeptical of the vaccine that now there's all these other concerns that the doctors don't want you to know and all these things. And it's, you know, whatever chance we had for herd immunity, he really put a dent in that. You know, whatever we were striving for, even taking into account the anti-vaxxers, he made the job a lot more difficult just overnight, just with one segment. And why?
I agree. Well, many segments, but yes, he has been banging those war drums for literally months at this point because he's insane and he doesn't care if his audience lives or dies.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So Joe Biden has his expansive plans for infrastructure, his American Families plan. Now, all of this is going to require and does include in the proposed legislation a variety of new taxes on the wealthy. They are by no means historically insane or radical taxes. The taxes on corporations don't even re-raise the corporate tax rate to the level it was at something like 4 or 5 years ago. But that does not mean, just because they're quite reasonable, that the rich are not going to complain about it. And some of the most influential rich are doing just that, with people like Jamie Dimon, the chairman and CEO of JPMorgan Chase, saying that if lawmakers plan to raise taxes, he would want an itemized list of what the money would be spent on. The sort of request that I unfortunately can't say certain words on the show in response to, but I would love to because you're one dude, who cares what you want? But unfortunately, while I can say that, Yasmin, there are a lot of people in DC who do care about what he thinks or wants, what people like him who are CEOs of banks want. So we're going to have more of his commentary, but I want your sort of knee-jerk reaction to Jamie Dimon saying, "I demand accountability and an itemized list of receipts."
I just feel like we've gotten a lot of really rich, elite, entitled news stories lately, and it's exhausting. How are these people so out of touch and they don't even realize it? In the case of Dimon, he is the CEO of JPMorgan Chase, so I'm assuming he knows a little bit about money and the economy and all that. But why does he think he's entitled to an itemized list? And it's not just what's available online already. If you go, you can look up how the government budget is spent and where so-and-so money goes. It's not a complete list though. And what he's asking for is ridiculous. He wants to know how many miles of freeway is gonna be built with this new infrastructure plan and things like that. I don't know why he thinks he is entitled to that or why he needs that. The one thing that I think we can all agree on is nobody likes to pay taxes. And that's the thing is, you know, where are my tax dollars going? My tax dollars paid Omarosa like $100,000 one year to do what? I don't know. I'm not happy about that, but it's ridiculous.
Well, that's funny because our Francesca joined me for our weekly top 10 list this week, and it was the top 10 things we don't want our tax money going to. We neglected to include Omarosa's salary, but you're right. Yeah, so you asked the question, who does he think he is? Well, look, unfortunately, I guess the joke is on us. He's a guy that largely gets whatever he and the bank that he represents wants, including tens of billions of dollars, if that's what he wants, unfortunately. Now, I want to give you a little bit of what he has to say, and then we'll discuss some more. He says, just throwing money, it doesn't work. We already waste tremendous sums of money. Look, considering the massive amount of money, over $25 billion that was given to his bank during the Great Recession, when they were saying, well, like, we're actually doing pretty well compared to these other banks. We don't really need the money, but like, we don't want to be singled out as not getting the money. So I guess he does know something about wasting great amounts of money. His salary, for instance, in many of these years, I would consider a tremendous waste of money. So he is somewhat of an expert in that area. I will grant him that. But he says, and this is what Yasmin was alluding to, on highways, how many miles are you going to build? How much is it going to cost? When's it going to get done? Who's responsible? On education, he doesn't think that free community college is precise enough. How many kids are going to graduate? How many kids are going to have a job at $65,000 a year? Why that specifically? Lawmakers and the administration owe that to the public, he said. They should promise, if you're going to give me your money, I'm going to be a good steward of it. And here's what I'm going to accomplish, and I'm going to report back to you. Now, notably, he expects that level of accountability and responsibility from the government when it comes to free community college or maintaining the highways, not setting the tax rate on banks and bankers, for instance. There, it's just the Wild West, anything goes. How many CEOs are going to be making $6.5 million a year in bonuses, Jamie Dimon? I want accountability and I want it to be itemized. But no, he's not expecting anything like that. But look, generally, the sort of stuff that he's talking about, we're spotlighting it because his belief that he gets to individually demand these things, I find to be petulant and annoying. But it's also kind of dumb. They do this stuff, you moron. That's what the, like, they're not just like, here's money for, they don't put the money on the highway and rub it a little bit and see what happens. Yes, they do studies of what's going to happen and how many, they have bids on particular projects. That by the way, have a length of how many miles of highway or high speed of rail and those sorts of things. These things are done. I don't know if he doesn't know that that's how it works, or he wants to imply that there's not that level of semi rigor. I don't know, but I do find his commentary to be annoying in multiple different directions at the same time.
Yeah, it is. Strangely reminiscent of Demi Lovato and the cookie incident at the Froyo place. Are you familiar with that? No. She went into a Froyo place in LA somewhere and she saw something that triggered her. It said like guilt-free or something on the cookie. And as someone who in the past has suffered from an eating disorder, she wanted to work with it. First, she tried to take them down on social media, the small business in Los Angeles. As we're finally coming out of a pandemic, she wants to take down the small business. And then she's like, oh, well, I'm willing to work with them on their messaging so that I don't feel triggered whenever I go to this particular Froyo place. And just the level of entitlement, she got railed for it. Nobody was happy about her response or her reaction, even though maybe her intentions were good. In the case of somebody like Dimon, who is a CEO of the largest bank in the United States, you know, if he does ask for an itemized list, maybe the government will give it to him. People give JP Morgan money all the time. If you look at the history of JP Morgan, it's insane. When it first started, the original OG JP Morgan, the actual guy, he started it back at the same time around like when Carnegie and Rockefeller, you know, the big industrial revolution with the United States. And he was the one who really championed conglomerates, monopolies. You know, he really liked to push different companies together and consolidate them and maximize their authority and their base, you know, their influence in government. And for a long time, JP Morgan was functioning as our national bank because we didn't have a national bank. So maybe coming from that long line, that long legacy, maybe he'll get his itemized list. And maybe he'll let us see it. That would be cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Look, and there's going to be congressional testimony and they're going to do all this stuff. Like it just,
it's exhausting. I find it so annoying.
Anyway, so well, look, we've alluded throughout this that Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had a problem with his commentary, as every rational person did. So let's get to that. She tweeted, "That's funny because Jamie Dimon didn't give working people an itemized list of the school districts, public hospitals, infrastructure, or affordable housing projects he was helping defund when he pushed for the $2 trillion GOP tax scam in 2017 with goodies for yacht and jet owners." That is totally true. All of that money could have gone to many things. There is an opportunity cost to the money that was wasted on people like him and banks like those he ran. But he didn't have a big problem with that. By the way, I realize I'm skipping around the graphics, apologies to the director, but we did find this quote from Jamie Dimon from back in 2012, where he had responded to a question about his political identification, where he said, "Look, I am a Democrat, but like barely a Democrat." He said, "I've gotten disturbed at some of the Democrats' anti-business behavior, the attacks on work ethic and successful people. I think it's very counterproductive. It doesn't mean I don't have their values. I want jobs. I want a more equitable society," said the billionaire. "I don't mind paying higher taxes." You don't? Because you seem like you mind it a little bit. It seems like it sticks in your craw a bit to pay higher taxes. Maybe you don't mind it, but you get really whiny and snippy about it. Which seems like minding to a regular person. And look, that's really the problem. Like, this is a guy who would say, I guess, that he's a Democrat. I guess by that he means that he doesn't want the government to ban same-sex marriage. But when it comes to anything about the financial responsibility of the government to actually care what happens to the working class or even the middle class, there he starts to have some real problems. That is anti-business behavior. Well, I got news for him. We've had a change in administration. If you wanted just endless money to go to the wealthy, you could re-vote for Trump, and some people did. But a lot of people weren't interested in that. And whether Joe Biden actually makes good on his many promises, he at least implied that there was going to be a change of the priorities of the federal government. And Jamie Dimon, you can see that that was quite a popular proposed change. So you've been in charge for decades and decades. There's no limit to when he thinks, I guess I've gotten enough. It's on us to say, you've had enough. And we're not interested in Joe Biden or Senate Democrats like crafting legislation to fulfill every one of your constantly changing whims. We're way past that, or at least we should be.
Okay. There's so much going on there too. Doesn't it feel a little bit like trickle down economics, which we know has never worked in the decades that we've been trying to do it? Because what he's really saying is, we don't need the tax cuts because, or we need to pay less taxes for corporations because if we make the United States inhospitable to corporations, then they will go elsewhere. And he's saying that that's bad for business. And he's saying just keep it all here, yeah, really lessen the tax burden so we don't have to pay as much, so we can make more jobs for people and we can pay our workers better. But we know that that's not what happens. They just keep it at the top. It doesn't trickle down. And nobody talks about this, but the idea of a trickle down is insulting. Like,
fundamentally, right? Yes. And by the way, yeah, I'm glad that Joe Biden, again, whether this has actually become core to his ideology, during his address to Congress, he did knock down that concept of trickle down economics. We've been through that lie. Jamie Dimon has been a part of that lie. We've done that cycle multiple times, and he's become fabulously wealthy while I defy you to say what he's added to our country during that time, or more importantly, people like him. At the end of the day, I don't really care about him. As soon as this segment is done, I will go back, like most people, to not thinking about him. But to all of these people that have told us the trickle down lie over and over and over, you can fool a lot of people, but you failed in this last election. That's not what people signed on to. Oh, Lindsey Graham, the path you have walked over the past few years to stay relevant and to at times briefly avoid being just decimated by your new God Emperor, Donald Trump. Well, Lindsey Graham is not going to allow this moment where the future of the Republican Party is being determined, with Liz Cheney sort of being like sacrificed at the altar of Trumphood. He is stepping in to talk about the future of the party, and here's what he had to say.
Just say to my Republican colleagues, can we move forward without President Trump? The answer is no. I've always liked Liz Cheney, but she's made a determination that the Republican Party can't grow with President Trump. I've determined we can't grow without him.
Okay, so really fast, Trump did respond to that, and here is what Trump had to say.
But I watched him on Fox today. I have never seen a guy that, I don't think I've ever seen a guy so totally out of control. They mentioned my name. He went literally crazy this morning.
Okay, so that was actually about something else, but it really does fit there because Lindsey Graham has gone crazy, Yasmin. And look, I certainly have thoughts, but I want to give you an opportunity. What did you think about his read of the future of the Republican Party?
Oh, it's hypocritical because that's very unlike what he said in the past when he said that Donald Trump would be the death of the Republican Party. And now he's saying that there is no future without Donald Trump, which is really hard for me to wrap my head around because Donald Trump is just the next president now. He's not really active. He doesn't do anything. He launched a blog, which is fun for him, I'm sure.
His desk.
But he doesn't do anything. Like, how is he even, you know what? We can talk about this more later. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give any spoilers out, but yeah, he's a no one right now. Donald Trump is not doing anything.
Be.
He's living in Fort. He should be. Every ex-president does stuff, but he hasn't done anything because he can't tweet. So I guess that has stopped him from doing anything else ever.
Look, we're going to turn in a minute to the Lindsey Graham-iness of this, but the general statement, that is so sad. So sad to say we can't continue without him. We can't continue without the guy that lost the presidency, lost us the Senate, lost us the House, lost us everything effectively. We were on top of the world and he destroyed it all. He's the only one that can save us. There's no evidence of that. Now, I think he might be right in that currently many Republican voters have been trained to only trust Trump. Lindsey Graham has been a part of that process of always deferring to Trump, never challenging him. You've created this monster that you now need to serve, but it is a very sad commentary for a major political party that this one insane ailing loser is your only path forward. For everything else that has to do with Lindsey Graham, there is that, but that is just a really sad thing for the Republican Party. I hope that the Democrats never feel that way, never go down that road with like believing that only Hillary Clinton, like we gotta bring her back, she's the only one. No, they're not your heroes. And especially those who lose should not be your heroes.
Yeah, I think it might have been Anna was talking about it the other day in regards to Joe Manchin when she was talking about how the Republican Party needs to be separate from Donald Trump right now, and it's not. And the reason why is because something that the Republicans do very well that the Democrats do not, and I think this is what Anna's point was that they get in line. They're just better at playing politics than the Democrats are. And that's all what this is. That's all they've done. Ever since Trump won the nomination, they fought him all the way up until he was nominated by the party. And then they all immediately fell in line. And now they don't know how to stop. They don't know how to get out because they have no leader of the party anymore. Maybe Mitch McConnell, maybe Ted Cruz or one of them. I don't know. But there's no obvious head of the party anymore. There's just a bunch of old dudes. Lindsey Graham, those type. So
yeah,
they just need some leadership.
Yeah, they do. Maybe they'll get it from DeSantis or something. Anyway, yeah, he ran in two elections. He couldn't get more than 47% of the popular vote, and he's the only guy going. We can't go forward without him. We can't grow the party without him. Look, I don't know if I'm the bad guy or if Lindsey Graham and Trump are the bad guys. I mean, in general, I think they're the bad guys. But in this case, maybe I'm the bad one because like with our conversations about Ted Cruz, deferring to Trump for the past few years after being viciously opposed to him being the nominee, I think that there should be a consistency. If you go out on the line and say, this person is the direct opposite of every one of our values, then you should stick to that. I think that moving on some things, evolving with new information is a good thing, but sometimes there should be lines that you shouldn't cross. And so let's talk about Lindsey Graham and Donald Trump. So Lindsey Graham, who we showed you the video earlier, is talking about like there's no path without Trump. Well, I'll show you this tweet for the 1,000th time. If we nominate Trump, we will get destroyed and we will deserve it. So that's what he said. Now, they won that election, so he was kind of wrong. But the party was destroyed. They lost his reelection bid. They lost the Senate. They lost the House. And that tweet is the one we focus on. But like, we can bring up this little mashup of so many of the no, don't let it be Trump tweets. He said it over and over. He said he's a bigot, he's xenophobic, he's racist, he's stupid, he's all sorts of things, all true, and not even the half of what he is, the monster he is. And for that, Lindsey Graham was attacked. So let's show you a little bit more of this old video of Trump talking about Lindsey Graham.
This guy, Lindsey Graham, you have a guy, he's one of the dumbest human beings I've ever seen. He's a sitting United States Senator from South Carolina. He's a 2%. I saw him on television this morning, and I think he lost it. He's saying, Donald Trump, he couldn't even talk. He was shaking. The hatred. They say, what do you think of Donald Trump? Oh, wow. He went crazy. The guy is a nut job. I mean, what the... And honestly, I don't want his endorsement. I don't want anything to do with him. And his thinking, he says, I know so much. He knows about the military. I could push him over with a little thimble. Boom.
I don't know what that has to do with anything. Noted strong guy exerciser Donald Trump. But anyway, yeah, you're one of the dumbest human beings on the planet. He doesn't want your endorsement. You don't know anything. And yet years later, Lindsey Graham is still desperate to give his endorsement constantly to Donald Trump so he can go golfing with him, so Trump won't attack him. Not even on Twitter anymore. Trump can't even do the thing you guys were all afraid of. What is he gonna put a post on his little desk blog? And you're still afraid of that. But Yasmin, they are. Lindsey Graham is still terrified of what Trump can do to him.
Yeah, there's two things that I will give Republicans credit for. The first being that they have no problem with being hypocritical. They'll say one thing, the next day they'll say the exact other thing. And act like it never happened, act like everything's totally fine. The rest of us are going crazy because we're all being gaslit. Like, didn't he just say that? And and I was like, yeah, maybe. But now he said this, and that's all that matters. The other thing that they do very well is they don't care that their policies are not popular because they'll just suppress votes in order to get their votes. They don't care that Donald Trump did not win the popular vote. And they don't care that he lost the election in 2020 either, because they still think that his policies and his persona, all of him, is what needs to propel the Republican Party forward after 2020, after 2024, I don't know, whenever.
I mean, maybe, look, to some extent, maybe it's convenient for these old school Republicans that in the past they had to like sort of try or pretend, like come up with, hey, we've got a healthcare plan or something. Like they had to pretend to do those things to do what they really want to do, which is the tax cuts. Trump maybe is just a shortcut. Like, we don't have to do any of that. We don't have to have a platform. We don't have to have plans. He'll go and he'll do his rallies, and all the dumb racists will applaud for him. And then we can give trillions of dollars to the wealthy. Like, I don't know, maybe it's convenient. But I just want to throw out one extra thing. There's a comment from Twitch from Telepanda who says, why would you push someone over with a thimble? What is that? That is not an expression. And it's not. Like, when he says that he like choked like a dog. Like, that's not, Trump makes up these weird expressions that say way more about him than about the world.
But and then anyway. He said like, oh, Lindsey Graham knows about the military. I can push him over with a thimble. What does one have to do with the other?
I don't know.
I can't comprehend any of it.
You know who knows a lot about the military? The only people I trust for military strategy is the world's strong men. If you can't deadlift 1,000 pounds, don't tell me about how tanks are supposed to work. Doesn't make any sense at all. Anyway, Arnold Schwarzenegger, military genius. I have some fond memories of my time living in Texas, but boy, have they been going through a rough patch, and it's getting rougher. So here are a couple of updates of what the Texas state government and their governor have been getting up to recently. First, on voting, They don't like it and they don't want it. So they're following in the footsteps of multiple other states, including Florida and Georgia, that have been cracking down on voting rights. Just last night, actually, they approved new, more restrictive state election rules after a session that lasted from late in the night into the early morning, with Democrats trying to stop it, trying to amend it, but unsuccessful because Texas is dominated at the state level by Republicans. The bill would make it a felony to provide a voter with an application to vote by mail if they hadn't requested one. A felony, or to use any public funds to facilitate the third party distribution of mail-in voting applications. So, I mean, it's the clearest thing in the world. They just don't want you to vote. And if you, like, if you're some volunteer, Yasmin, who's like trying to help people to vote, like, they could send you to prison for it.
Yeah, I do volunteer and help people to vote. I do that stuff. So it's crazy. And especially the part about how it's a felony now to send ballots to someone who didn't request one. That's in direct response to what happened during the 2020 election. Definitely in Houston, I think maybe in other Texas cities. Most Texas cities, for people who don't know, are actually blue. The only major Texas city that is not blue is Fort Worth, Texas. And we don't talk about them. But in Houston, I know that our guy, the guy who is in charge of our election process, basically, and he was an interim, so he was filling in, but he did a lot of really progressive moves to help people vote during the pandemic. And one of those moves was to send mail-in ballots to people throughout Houston. And immediately the state came in and said, you cannot do that. There wasn't, as far as I know, there wasn't any rule against it. I don't think he broke any laws or anything like that, but he immediately was shut down, and now they passed this legislation. And there's so much going on in Texas right now. Yesterday was hard because so many things were coming out and everyone was worse than the other. And I'm sure we'll talk about more.
Yeah, why don't we actually? Yeah. Let's turn to more, because the name of the block is Texas is Hell, and it's not just because of the voting. Basically, they are making clear to the people of Texas what their priorities are, and they're identifying things that are dangerous. So what's dangerous? Mail-in voting applications. What's not dangerous? Handguns. That's what I'm getting out of them, because Texas Senate just 2 days ago passed a bill that would remove permit requirements for people to carry handguns in public, moving the bill one step closer to becoming law. They call this constitutional carry. Why? Because they think it sounds cool and they think it'll fool you into thinking it's some sort of right that you should be able to have whatever weapon, wherever you want, anywhere you want, with no restrictions. That's not what the Constitution actually says, but they throw the word in there to bamboozle you. So that term appears in this graphic, but understand there's a direct quote, and I don't support it. Texas Governor Abbott said, people are already allowed to have constitutional carry for long guns in the state of Texas. This just adds handguns. Someone has to still go through a background check when they buy a handgun. So yes, it is true. It does not make it necessarily any easier to buy the gun. But now, if you just want to like have guns and walk around and try to scare the hell out of people, and maybe, just maybe, shoot yourself in the crotch in a Home Depot, it has become slightly easier to do that in Texas. So thank you, Governor Abbott and Texas Republicans.
Yeah, what was so frustrating about this too is, you know, obviously it's Texas, we're a gun state. I think that Texas, and I'm originally from the Northeast, so I feel like I have a good perspective on this. Texas does kind of get both sides of the gun control argument. You know, guns are a big part of the culture in Texas. Do with that whatever you will. But we're not so anti-gun either. And something like this, though, it's terrifying. You know, I was at a Democratic, it was just like an event, not really a rally, just an event for a Democratic group here in Houston. And there was some people there from the Republican counter party. And they were there and they were just sitting there, and we were in a public park and they had their guns on them, visible, which was incredibly threatening. We called the cops, the cops couldn't do anything about it. And this was before the Senate even passed this like insane law. And there was children in the park and they were fine. The cops couldn't do anything about it, and it was terrifying. It feels very unsafe. And especially after considering what happened in El Paso, it hurts. It's a really big blow.
Yeah, just having tons of people carry guns around increases the chance of accidents that could injure or kill themselves or others. It increases the likelihood that people will just leave their guns somewhere. It happens all the time. And by the way, you might say, oh, no, but like they gotta like, come on, they wanna be well trained. No, they're specifically stripping away the permits. Like, they're making it easier. This is not it's an important right. In fact, it's a duty to have your gun, but we want to make sure that you're well trained. No, it's just everybody. Just have your guns around. And honestly, like, if you're a Texas Republican and you like the idea of this, you think it's constitutional, just imagine any other country. I know it's difficult because you've never been to one and you don't want to, but imagine you're in the Middle East and there's just a pack of people. There's people and then there's a pack of people with guns. What do you think about the relationship between those two different groups? Anywhere, imagine it anywhere in the world, and you know that you don't like the idea of packs of people who both carry guns around everywhere they go and really think that should be core to their politics. You are just willing to make an exception for yourself here because it's you and you like the idea of trying to intimidate liberals or whatever. But it is the same thing. And it's not good, it's not constitutional, it's not moral, it's not religious, it's not any of that. It's compensation and trying to intimidate people and maybe laying the groundwork for some more political violence, which Republicans have become much more comfortable with over the past few years. Anyway, any final thoughts, Yasmin, on Texas? Any
word of defense? Yeah, they're about to get rid of abortion rights too. So that's another thing that we're also dealing with. So
it
sucks here. But like this last week especially, they've done a lot. And for the record, just so you all know, the Texas state government is completely Republican controlled, even though, as I said earlier, most of the Texas cities are all blue. They're all Democratic. Yeah. So this is not still quite a bit for a lot of people. And they redistrict the hell out of all the districts too. After every election, every time they lose a seat or they're even threatened to lose a seat, they make it even harder.
Exactly. I mean, and that is why you can have gradual shift in voting demographics in Texas, but they just stuff more people into a couple of specific congressional districts, diluting their power, or in some ways concentrating it, but with the minimum possible representatives. Last year at all of those protests, I mean, we showed you countless acts of police brutality and needless violence, both from the cops and then also from counter protesters against people who are just, you know, fighting for their rights, trying to push for a little bit more justice in the country. Now, some damage that was done to those protesters, it turned out, was a little bit less visible or a little bit harder to understand. But new studies are showing that the widespread use of tear gas and things like it by police to break up crowds, or sometimes just to punish them. There were many instances we showed you where they would hem protesters in so they couldn't leave, and then they would tear gas them. It wasn't to disperse them, there was nowhere for them to go. It was to punish them. Well, it turns out that can have effects, especially on women. So last summer, in the midst of all this, anecdotes started cropping up online of protesters convinced that regular exposure to the chemical had disrupted their menstrual cycles. A preschool teacher told Oregon Public Broadcasting that if she inhaled a significant amount of gas at night, she'd get her period the next morning. Other Portland residents shared stories of periods that lasted for weeks and of unusual spotting. Transgender men described sudden periods that defied hormones that had kept menstruation at bay for months or years. Nearly 900 people reported something like this, with symptoms including intense cramping and increased bleeding, headaches, nausea, diarrhea, mental health concerns. Well, now there's this study and the results are available. You go to the New York Times and you can read that in depth if you'd like. But researchers talked to a ton of people about their exposure and what effects they had. And one of the study authors says, even though we cannot say anything scientifically definitive about these chemical agents and a causal relationship to menstrual irregularities, we can definitively say that in our study, most people who had menstrual cycles or a uterus reported menstrual irregularities after reporting exposure to tear gas. So this is not definitive. They're the first to say that. But Yasmin, it does appear that tear gas does have not only the obvious negative effects that we know, but specifically on women, some horrendous ones that haven't been talked about really at all.
Yeah, I mean, who knows what else these things are doing to us? I mean, it's chemical warfare and they're inflicting it on their own people, their own populations, not just in the United States, but all over. You know, all protests around the world, every time you look into it, someone there is getting tear gassed and they act like these really harsh chemicals, all they do is make it cry and they just make your eyes kind of itchy and watery. They're harmless. Yeah. Impossible. There's no way. And even, I mean, I guess I'm extra sensitive about this topic too, because at least in Houston, it feels like more recently than before, there's just chemicals in the air and in our water, and they will kind of let us know. And they're like, yeah, it's fine now. You can go outside again. Like that's happened so many times in the last couple of months. And it's like, wow, what are they doing to us? They're killing us, and we don't even know what the effects are. And with the tear gas thing, it's these are people who are protesting, which is their constitutional right to do so, at least in the United States. I can't speak for every country, but protesting is a thing that people should be able to do, especially if they're doing it peacefully, which a lot of times they are, and they still get tear gassed for it. It reminds me of the umbrella protests in Hong Kong. I think that was 2019. And everybody, they had umbrellas, and that was their symbol for peace, because they say, we're not here to fight, but we have umbrellas to protect us from the tear gas that you're trying to get us with. And I thought that was such a powerful symbol and pretty clever on their part as well.
Yeah. And by the way, you're totally right. In this case, I think I'm very glad that people are questioning the police in a lot of ways that they haven't for a long time, or at least that there haven't been a sort of sustained public movement that's getting press coverage. But one part of that should be really questioning some of their tactics when it comes to equipment. We have this assumption that if something's been used for a long time, I guess it's safe. Well, they point out in this study that a lot of the stuff about tear gas, these are like old studies that the police did themselves over half a century ago. And I'm sure they were being super rigorous. But yeah, things like tear gas, as well as other chemical irritants, and tear gas is just one of them. The widespread use of flashbangs, the less lethal stun guns and things like that. All of this has an effect on the body and needs to be acknowledged. It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. If you've been watching for a while, you know that every Friday we comb through the political garbage and we select a few items to throw in the trash. Normally with Brett Ehrlich, we've got something much better this week. Yasmin joins us for Garbage People for the first time. Yasmin, we're gonna get started with you. Who is your garbage person of the week?
Well, I know that you guys have recently covered him, and I know that he's a recurring guest on the Garbage People of the Week segment, but it is Ted Cruz, and I picked him because it's personal for me. I still have not forgiven Ted Cruz for leaving us, abandoning all of the Texans, especially the Houstonians, in the middle of a polar vortex when we had no power, no water, and we were freezing in our homes, and he fled to Cancun and then decided to blame it on his children. I'm still not over it. That was in February. Now he has been seen dining at Mar-a-Lago with Donald Trump. Ugh. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, they just have like coffee and water, I think. That's all. I don't think it's a full dinner. But the plan is to take back Congress in 2022. That's what they're working on now. And Donald Trump, now that he has his blog, I guess that's how he's gonna be helping and facilitating. So I guess they're just doing like digital marketing strategizing at Mar-a-Lago. Is that all that is?
Yeah. That's fun. Yeah, there was a lot to like about that. He had just tweeted a couple days earlier, the Republican Party isn't the party of country clubs, but of the blue collar working man. And sometimes I can see some of their blue collars from the country club I'm eating in.
Ted Cruz lives in the richest part of Houston, by the way. I don't like that he lives in my city, because again, this is not even a red city. We didn't vote for Ted Cruz here. He had a huge billboard on the side of 45, like our major highway that goes through the city. And everyone, like, it was so obnoxious, because everyone was like, we're not gonna vote for you. We don't like you here. And he lives in River Oaks, which is the most expensive part of Houston. And he is a member of the River Oaks Country Club, which is a very exclusive country club. And he says things like that, like people don't know that he does this.
Well, people in River Oaks don't even like him.
Yeah, the best part of the polar vortex thing was when his wife's friend outed them for leaving from their group chat. I was like, nobody likes these guys. Nobody likes them. I don't like them. I don't like that he's in my city. Get out of here, Ted.
Well, he'd like to. He'd love to leave. And in fact, so you've identified his trip to Mar-a-Lago. He went to Cancun. He also took one other trip that you had a problem with, didn't he?
Oh, down in the swamp. Mm-hmm. Don't you have an impression? is this your opportunity?
No. The impression was actually the forced smile on his face as he's sitting with Donald Trump. That me.
Yeah,
I thought I'd be president.
Down to the Rio Grande to, I don't know, like scope out the illegals, I guess, on the other side of the river in Mexico. Which it was all so farcical and ridiculous. Like, why would he need to be there? And why didn't you go for the whole 4 years whenever Trump was there? At least now we're reuniting those families who are separated. At least, at the very least, we're doing that much. I know it's not perfect. I know the situation at the border is still a huge problem. Why is Ted there, though? Why? What is he going to do in his like camo getup vest thing? What is he wearing? I don't know.
I think he's hunting gators. No, my favorite part of that. No. My favorite part of that was when he said that he overheard cartel members across the river making fun of Border Patrol. Like, but first of all, you wouldn't hear them from that far away. Second of all, how would you know they're cartel? Dude, you just heard someone on your side of the river making fun of you. Like, honestly, you're just embarrassing yourself.
Oh, I have a story about that. One time I was in Fort Worth, Texas, the only red city in Texas, and I was sitting in a coffee shop. This must have been like close, like 2011, 2012-ish, so maybe leading up to the 2012 election. And I was sitting in a coffee shop and there were these guys sitting behind me and I was eavesdropping a little bit. They were talking about the future of the Republican Party in Texas and what they're gonna do and the upcoming, what they're gonna do about Obama, I don't know. And they were saying, they were talking so much smack about Ted Cruz. And then they said, yeah, but it'll probably be him. We can just like push him up and he'll be fine. So even the Republicans don't even like him. Even the people who are promoting him don't like or respect him because they were saying all kinds of stuff about him. Nobody likes him. I don't even know if Ted Cruz likes Ted Cruz at this point.
Yeah, there's some documented footage that his family seems to have problems with him too. But anyway, a very good first garbage person. Thank you for that. Garbage person of the week is sometimes I need a photo to sort of encapsulate the person. So I've gotten this picture of Cruella De Vil. But what you need to understand is that it's not actually Cruella De Vil who's going in the trash. There's a good chance it might be you. Well, what do I mean about that? Well, I've been keeping a watch on dogs over the past few years. I always do. And during the pandemic, dogs were very much in the news initially. There were, I'm gonna walk you through a few months of headlines. There were concerns over dog fishing and abandoned pets. Dog fishing is where lots of people want dogs. The concern is when there's a lot of demand, they might be given dogs that they may not like, which makes me mad because every dog deserves a home. And also pets being abandoned because there was this economic catastrophe. Maybe people get rid of their dogs. But the thing was, it actually turned out that lots of people were alone and wanted dogs. And so there was this puppy boom. And so there were concerns about smuggling and price gouging and dog napping. It even hit Lady Gaga of people stealing these dogs. And then we start to get further into the pandemic. And after the puppy boom, you have the puppy bust, where lots of people realize that they either can't take or don't want the best creature ever on our planet. And so hundreds of lockdown puppies began to be resold or abandoned. This latest edition was brought to my attention in this video by the BBC. Let's watch a little bit.
At the beginning of the pandemic, we absolutely saw a spike in people ready to adopt. They were off work or working from home or had lower schedules. And so they said, okay, this is the time to bring in a dog. But we, in the past couple of months, have definitely seen some more returns. Sometimes people, you know, also just don't really think through or understand how serious that commitment is of taking care of a life, whether that's a dog or a cat. And that stress is a little too much for them. And so they also return for that reason.
And it's a big thing. There's reports of drastic increases in animals being abandoned in states like Alabama, Ohio, and Nevada. In the UK, hundreds of puppies that were purchased during the lockdown are now being disowned and sold. I love that they throw in that they're disowning them. Like, you're not my dog. That seems weird. And look, a lot of teams, we have the Houston SPCA talking about the issues with abandonment. So look, if you have lost your job, if you've lost your resources, if you lost your home and you can't take care of an animal, I understand that. And I understand that some people are abandoning them because they can't give them to shelters because the shelters are already maxed out from lack of resources. But that is still a living animal who should not be abandoned on the street where it might be died, or it might be killed or abused, might starve to death. And the idea that some people are just sort of like moving on, like they've gotten bored of it, like their other pandemic hobbies, like they're not interested in their sourdough starter. I don't use the typewriter I bought that much. The idea that you would treat a dog like that, Yasmin, that just kills me. And that's why you're in the garbage, not you individually, but some of you in Houston and around the country and around the world.
Oh no.
You're a part of this puppy bust.
That's so sad. I didn't know about that. That's really horrible. I almost got a puppy during the pandemic because now is the perfect time to do it. If you're gonna have a puppy, you can train it because you're home all the time. But I mean, that didn't happen. It's coming though. I feel like it's coming.
So, oh really? But if you got one, you're gonna keep it, right?
Yeah, I would. Like who? How? I can't even imagine giving it back.
Yeah.
No, I would never.
Yeah. Especially because there's like no animal that's more there for you when you need it most. The idea that we would abandon them when we don't need them anymore, it just, oh God.
It's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking, it's selfish, it's so many things. It's mean.
Exactly. Okay, now, those are our garbage people of the week, but what about your garbage people of the week? As always, we polled our audience and 28,000 of you voted in the poll this week. And here is our top five. Coming at number five with 10% of the vote, Ron DeSantis for only allowing Fox and Friends to cover his bill signing and possibly violating the First Amendment. Coming at number two with 13% of the vote, Caitlyn Jenner for her comments on trans athletes. I would also throw in her comments about personal plane hangers and the homeless. There's just a lot of bad stuff coming out of that candidate. But anyway, coming in at number three with 20% of the vote, Ted Cruz for cozying up to the man who repeatedly insulted his fam. Hey, there's some overlap with you, Yasmin. That's always good.
Yeah.
Coming in at number two with 24% of the vote, very close votes here. The Arizona GOP for wasting taxpayers' money to find bamboo votes. I only sort of know that reference. I know it's a part of their audit. They've lost their minds. But number one this week, garbage person of the week for the community with 32% of the vote, Joe Manchin for continuing to champion non-existent bipartisanship. Joe Manchin, always a contender for the title and much deserved this week thanks to his interview with Chris Cuomo. So thank you to all of you, the 28,000 of you who voted, really do appreciate that. And Yasmin, thank you for joining us on this Friday edition of the Damage Report. Very much appreciate you being here. Where can people see more of your work?
People can find me. My podcast is called Global Thread and it's available wherever podcasts are available. My Instagram is where you can most likely find me. It's at Yaz K with 5 Z's, YazzzzK. There you go. And upcoming on the podcast, we have a story about Taiwan and China. That's next. So you can tune in.
Sounds good. Well, thank you very much for your contribution to the show and have a good weekend.
Thanks for having me. Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.